The main thing I'd like to do is to welcome the Sasha and the John and Mark. I'm guessing that everybody got the email, otherwise you would have turned off. So, just a very warm welcome to both of them. As you may know, they both just completed a very long retreat, more than 3 years in France. And the reason we're gathering here first is that they're going to talk a little bit about their retreat and maybe take any questions, particularly about meditation or retreat.
Either.
And then after that we'll go and do some meditation, hopefully at least a short puja. We'll see. So, very warm welcome. The Sasha's got a long-standing connection with our centre. He used to be the president here. Jai Mala's first visit to our centre, but she's got personal connections with some of us, so that's lovely to have you here as well. So, yeah, I won't say more. I'll hand over to you guys.
Well, it's a real pleasure and delight for me to be back in the Tosca Buddhist Centre. Yes, apologies to those of you who came along hoping for a silent practice. I do sympathise. I've done a lot of silent practice over the last 3 years. Coming down to Bristol, I was coming down because I have a lot of connections of all sorts in Bristol, actually, including having ordained quite a few outstanding members of the Bristol order. So I was coming down to do a weekend for them, and it seemed like a good opportunity to come and also see some more people. I'm partly saying this because I'm here for a few days, but I won't manage to meet up with a lot of old friends around the Sangha while I'm here on this visit. I'll come some other time and catch up with more of you. So I thought it would be an opportunity for Vijay Mara and I to just talk a little bit about our retreat. It's quite an unusual thing to have done in Sri Lanka, and we both felt that we weren't really just doing it for ourselves. We were doing it very much within our community and for the benefit of our community and hopefully of sentient beings on some level or other. And before we went away on retreat, when we saw Bhante Sangharakshita, he was saying, oh, well, you're pioneers. And I think it's always good if people do sort of pioneer, they kind of explore an adventure, but they come back and tell you a little bit about where they went and how it was. Even if only to say, well, don't go over there where we went, because there'd be dragons. We want to say a little bit about our time. It is quite difficult to sum up 3 years, well over 3 years, of meditation and Dharma practice in quite intensive conditions. But we can maybe just give you at least a taste of it, a hint of what it was like. And I think we're both hoping that we can say a little bit, and then there'll be some questions, and in that way, rather than us just talking, and you'll get to discover things that you'd be interested to know. So maybe just a little bit of background about how it all came about. I think we both had a real love of meditation over a long period of time. And I'd always hoped that one day I could do some kind of long retreat. And I'd lived at Gujarat for a bunch of career times over my long and illustrious order career. And there'd never really been an opportunity to do a 3-year retreat. But then, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was invited on a seminar at Majumaloka with a man called Lama Lundrup, who is a German-Tibetan Buddhist. And he was doing some seminars for an invited group of order members. And his main job in his Sangha was guiding people in long retreats. He himself had done, I think, about 7 years of his own retreat, and he wanted to do more, but then his Tibetan teacher had said, now it's time for you to go and guide other people. And he's now guided 5 groups going through 3-year retreats. So you have a wealth of experience of that kind of long retreat. And it just seemed like a very good opportunity to go and do 3 years of solid Dharma practice, but also to learn from somebody and bring back some of that experience into Trivatna, from somebody who'd just done so much. So I came away from the Majjhimaloka seminar thinking that's what I want to do, and came back. I was living with Vijayamala, and came back and from the seminar and said, I might want to be going away for 3 years or so. To which the response was,
great, I'd like to do so too.
I thought that might be the response. And Lama Dundruk himself, in his early days, he'd done 3 years retreat with his wife. They did 3 years practice together, and he felt that it had gone very well, and they got quite a long way with the Dharma. At the end of it, they'd separated very amicably, and he'd become a monk, and she'd become a nun. So
I don't think we've got that sort of intention. But,
so his Sangha was based in the Auvergne in central France, which is where it's in the foothills of the Massif Central, so a couple of thousand feet up, and although it's allegedly in the south of France, it was actually very cold in the winter. So we went out there and scouted around, and he helped us find a place in 2 old wooden circus wagons on a piece of land owned by a German couple who also wanted to do a retreat. So we had our own individual retreats. Each of us had a circus wagon, and we'd spend hours and hours a day meditating and studying and practicing, but then we'd also meet up and work together on the Dharma. And we'd also have connections with this young couple who were also doing retreat, and they went out and did a lot of shopping, so we didn't really have to go out and find ourselves in the French equivalent of Tesco's in the middle of a retreat. So that was very, very good. Hello. Should we find you a seat? So we did 2 months sort of pre-retreat just to test it out. In January to March 2008, and then in the summer we moved out to France and moved into these old wooden circus wagons and did almost about 3 years and 3 months of retreat. And what can you say about it? It's very hard to put into words. Maybe we should we each say a bit about our own retreat?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you want to say a bit?
Dharma Factory. I've just been in an order weekend up in Norwich, and Dharma Factory said, you seem to sort of come back quite relaxed and straightforwardly, and you just never know what to expect when you go away for that period of time and do something that you've never done before, and not many people you know have done before either. And I, at one point, I thought, well, I suppose it could be like, you know, if you go on a 2-week retreat or a month retreat or a 3-month retreat, or would it be like that times 20, or what was it going to be like? Because if it was going to be like
that times 20 coming back, that would be quite something. But actually, it wasn't at all like that. I mean, I don't know if partly, you know, 3 years is a long time to sort of build up an increasing level of intensity in that way. But in a way, I think I quickly realised that isn't really what I wanted, I was interested in doing, in a way. So it felt much more like sort of living my life, just living life under very, very good conditions for practice. And I think, speaking for myself, it wasn't even... I wasn't aware of it, put it this way, of it being a particularly dhyanic phase of practice for me. I think I was more interested in just having the opportunity to really follow my experience and look at experience and, well, what was that? And all the assumptions I make all the time about what I'm doing, what the world around me is, how I interact with that, everything, just everything on every level. It was an opportunity to just keep looking at those assumptions and the nature of experience. You know, I think everything's a certain way, but is it really? You know, is it really like that? You know, I think when you've got those conditions, it just helps you. There's not many distractions around, so the bits where it gets a bit sort of, well, yeah, but I really want that bit to be like that, please. You're just left with it. And I think a lot of it did become about relaxing, actually. Relaxing with the fact that I don't know what my experience is, you know, and the more I look, the less I know, the less concrete it becomes. And, yeah, and I can just sort of, all I can do is let go, really let go of the sort of ideas I have about it. And I think that's partly why I find it a bit difficult to talk about the experience of the retreat, because every time I find myself sort of, which I often did, you know, sort of going down this, oh, well, now I'm doing this, and, oh, maybe I'm going to be this sort of a person, or, oh, I can go back and then I can say this. And every time I sort of realised that was what I was doing, I just sort of, okay, just relax, just forget. You don't have to do that, you know. I really had the opportunity of being no one, going nowhere. And it was amazing. It's quite difficult to sort of formulate what it was all about. And I don't know, I mean, I suppose that'll come out over time, you know, as I see things. What an incredible opportunity it was. So it's part of what I said, well, maybe if you ask some questions, you know, we'll be able to sort of, respond to that a bit. But yes, it's just an incredible opportunity to do that, I think.
Did you follow the same structure every single day?
Not at all. I mean, we had sort of vaguely... 4 sessions of practice. So we had a sort of pre-breakfast session and a pre-lunch session, evening session, early evening session, and a late evening session. But how long we meditated for during those sessions, and what we did during those sessions, sometimes we'd study, sometimes we'd walk, sometimes we'd just be in nature, and, you know, it was a very natural process. It didn't start off being particularly natural. You know, we both, I think, gosh, this is a real opportunity. Now we've got to make the most of it. But we just, you know, we just came a problem with that, really. We just had to sort of, just relax and, you know, what is going on here? What is experience? What is the most useful thing to do? Not what we think is the most useful thing to do, or what we'd like to be the most useful thing. Relaxing was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons, apparently, why some Tibetan schools do 3 years and 3 months is they say that that's long enough for your energy to go sort of through a complete cycle of its typical sort of patterns. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't just going more and more and more inward in meditation. There were times where I'd feel very sort of inward, and then there would be times where I'd feel quite extrovert and kind of communicative, and sort of then have to find a way of working with that tendency. And the part of me that would actually quite like the opportunity, you know, halfway through, to have sat with a whole room full of people and talked about the Dharma. I had to sort of find some other way of operating, you know, so I'm still sitting on my cushion, you know, just as I was when I was quite introverted. But it's, I think part of it is just developing a real sort of sensitivity to, your rhythms of your metabolism, your experience, you know, a real sensitivity to all the conditions that are affecting you, and finding a sort of appropriate response. And as Vijayamala was saying, very often doing that involved getting underneath my story about how I wanted it to be, or how I should be, or what was going to be the right thing, and actually coming back to a real deep experience and coming into tune with that. Yeah, it's very helpful in that way. I think for me too, was three years is a long time, so it also means you can dive quite deeply into a lot of different aspects of practice. There were times when I was doing a lot of sort of metta and compassion sort of practice, and times when I was doing more devotional practice. And then, yes, also quite a lot of just looking at the nature of experience. And again, yes, I'd have to sort of feel out where the next kind of opening was going to be. And so, yeah, again, not have too fixed a pattern at all. And I did find this looking at the nature of experience very, very helpful. It's almost like, yes, because you can also keep coming back to things over 3 years and so gradually taking them deeper. So like to start with, I'd be telling myself my usual stories about who I am, what I'm trying to get out of the retreat, and how it's going to be, and quite identified with those stories. You know, this is how things are, and this is how I am. But as time went on, I started to unpick some of that, and there'd still be these sort of whole chains of thoughts that are going on sometimes out of meditation, sometimes in meditation. Then you start getting interested in, well, what is a thought anyway? Funny thing, they're quite, you know, flimsy things, aren't they? It's just, you know, a whole lot of kind of words and pictures, and out of that, you know, I build this whole kind of, you know, view of the world and how I am and how things are and how I've got to be, and I'm sort of pulled along by the nose by these things that I've never hardly examined. And when I do examine them, well, this isn't thing very much there. It's quite a strange thing, the way we human beings, you know, sort of get drawn along, you know, sort of carried along on this sort of flow of thoughts and ideas. And then as the retreat went on, I'd sort of get more into just looking at, well, why is this story keeping on going? Why are all these thought chains rumbling along, you know, sort of freight trains in the night, you know, sort of through my mind? And you start to see, well, there's a real sort of craving to think, actually, craving to just, you know, it's in a way I'm perpetuating that tendency. And then you start thinking, well, why is that? What's underneath that? So you start sort of trying to go underneath that, and you start, well, I start finding there's just a craving to exist. There's just a craving to be somebody. Going somewhere, doing something. Right. And it's quite interesting coming back. You know, at the moment I still, you know, a bit of a sort of, at times a still space, you know, that I've been tapped into. And just watching, you know, the world sort of going at such a speed and such complexity. And some of it's really necessary to, you know, just be able to live. But you just feel there's something sort of driving it all. It's like if you study that wheel of life. You know, you've got the cock and the snake and the pig at the centre, and they're kind of rushing along. And what is all that about? And it seems to be that there's a, if I look at my experience, yeah, there's just this great wishing to be identified as me, as someone, which then produces also, you know, as soon as I've got a me that I'm identified with, then I've got all of you as out there as separate, and now I've got, you know, am I all right in relation to you, and all sorts of complex things, then I could build up a whole, I don't know, words sort of family, you know, a whole kind of panoply of different experiences that I have to have and not have, and one I'm not interested in, all just because I'm kind of hanging on to this sort of idea and it sort of fits me out in the middle of it. But then if I look at, well, why am I doing that? There seems to be a fear of just kind of letting go and trusting that my experience will just keep flowing along, even if there isn't fixing me in the central ritual. And then things get very interesting at that point. So yes, I don't know how much of that made sense to you, but you get the sense of, you know, it's long enough for a process of sort of exploring deeper and deeper. And so I'm picking assumptions about how things are. And I found that very useful. So it's been interesting coming back. Life's been coming quite fast at me since I've come back. So I haven't felt overwhelmed by it, and I think that's because looking more at the nature of the experience, even though the quality of my experience is very different, if something got accelerated and multiplied, the nature of the experience hasn't really changed. It's still the same. So in that way, it's still quite steady. Oh, mm-hmm. I was going to launch into a...
What kind of input were you getting from the German-Tibetan guide? Is he sort of giving you instruction or just checking in on you?
Well, it was both. He'd come about every 3 weeks, and he'd spend quite a long time with us at that point, the four of us who were practicing. And, to start with, we talked about the last 2 weeks and what had gone on for us, and all together we didn't particularly have separate interviews. And he was very prepared to work. He was amazing, really, because he were turned up from a completely different sangha, and he was just really prepared to work with however we wanted to work. And he said, well, the mind is the mind, you know, you do your practices and we'll see what happens, and, you know. And it was great for him because we were able to do this retreat and do the practices that we felt and he felt that we needed to do a lot. I mean, I think in the traditional Tibetan 3-year retreats, you know, you go through this whole system of practice, which is great for what it's trying to do, which is give people a wide breadth of understanding so they can be teachers within that tradition, but it can often happen quite quickly and we just wanted to do what was appropriate for them at the time. He would work with us in the practices that we were doing. And often he would just be sort of listening really and saying great and carry on. But sometimes he'd just really sort of be able to mirror back what was going on. So, in, say, our exploration of relaxing, you know, he might say, well, you know, I can see you, you know, you are relaxing and you want to relax and you think you're relaxing, but have you looked at this, you know, or what about this, you know? And it just sort of just put a very light finger on something that, oh, yeah, you know, and just occasionally, you know, it really, really helped. I think, you know, overall he saved me an awful lot of time in a way, not that I wanted time to be saved, but yeah, I really appreciated having that input.
Mm. Yeah, he'd often come and spend 5 or 6 hours with this one, did come in. And we'd, yeah, sometimes he'd do some study with us. And, yeah, sometimes things, traditional texts. We had one really good study on reimagining the Buddha.
Yes. He got very excited about that.
He did a very good job. And it was very, it was good being in a little group. Because for me it broke down any sense of, you know, here's me having my special meditative experiences and I'll go and talk to the Lama about them. You know. It broke all that down. My meditation wasn't going very well, and I talk about that, and I just have to think, oh well, the other three will, they'll understand, they won't be going wrong. After all these years. And also I learned a lot just from hearing how he approached the other three. In a way, I learned almost as much from what he said to Vijay Marlin as I did from what he said to me. And I'm a great fan of mentoring, actually. I think that kind of wherever you are on the path, you can always, it's always good if there's somebody that you're in touch with who's, you know, further on than you, or at least, you know, on your level, who can sort of mirror you back and make suggestions. And yeah, as Vijay Marla said, I think you can save a lot of time like that.
He also, I think he was also teaching us how to look at our experience by doing that, you know, by the way that he was with us. You know, where I could be like that with myself, you know, I would learn a bit from that.
How did you keep alive the idea of being on a retreat for 3 years rather than it just being, this is what I'm doing with it?
In one way, it did feel like this is what we're doing. But what we were doing was the Dharma.
Mm.
So yes, it felt less special as time went on.
Mm.
You know, we're doing this very special thing. I think one of the advantages of having quite a long time is that you can't sustain, this is very special. Mm-hmm. Thing. That's another way of tensing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, it's just another day. This is just another moment of life.
Mm.
But yes, you just dedicate it to the three jewels and do whatever's appropriate within that. And yes, we were doing a lot of meditation, but you know, the aim was right from the moment you wake up, whether you're gardening or shoveling snow or whatever, cooking, you know, there's still that thread going through of, well, this is still, you know, for the benefit of beings, it's devoted to the three jewels and there's mindfulness there. So that's both very everyday and very special.
Could you stay with the quite a localized area,
or were you moving around, or were you literally just there for 3 years and you didn't go anywhere? You just, I'm just trying to get a sense of that.
Yeah,
it's a good question. We went thinking that we probably wouldn't even go out of the grounds much, but in the event, partly Sandra's health didn't really stand up to that way of practicing, so We after a while we decided that we would walk around the area a bit more, so we took it, we ran and walked around the area a fair amount. But you know, on the whole, apart from that, it was a very rural area, so we didn't see many people when we did that, and on the whole it was sort of very much in that space, and our shopping was being done for us, so we didn't have to go out for that reason. Occasionally we had to go out to the dentist and things like that. And in fact, I'd made the choice before we went out to come back and visit my aged parents. So, I did that. Yeah, then on the whole, we were there, which again helps to sort of give it this sort of contained feeling.
So you came back on a secret mission?
I did. Yeah. Not many people knew that.
Did you come back on a secret mission? Not so.
Oh, that's pretty wonderful.
Secrets are secrets.
Well, I can't really put this question very well, but I'll try. It's to do with, you mentioned earlier the question, well, what is my experience?
Yes.
What you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you surprised to discover that it wasn't easy to actually say what your experience was?
Yeah, absolutely.
And did you have thoughts about, well, what have I been doing all these years that it's taken me to this, it's taken this long, or this particular set of conditions for me to be able to even begin to see that, although I think I might know what my experience is, actually I don't really know what my experience is.
What have I been doing all these years? What sort of a thought is that? So yeah, that would come up, but yeah. What was that doing there, you know? It's always the same process, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we do, isn't it? Where we do this sort of thing. We have these quirks and tendencies, and we go up blind paths and go down them again. And I just find it fascinating that the more I practice, I've been practicing now for 30 years, but the more I practice, it's like, well, what have I been doing?
Was that an enjoyable experience?
Yes.
Or was there any tinge of...
I learned for it to be an enjoyable experience.
Right.
That's one of the things I learned, I think. Because it happens so often that, you know, I would just not get out of bed in the morning. I'd be like, do you know what I mean? It's like, well, I thought, oh, yeah, you know, okay, so that's just another thought, really, isn't it? It's just another way of telling myself a story. I'm going to die, and then what have I been doing with the whole of my life?
I think it takes a long time to work through. It's a bit like archaeology, you know, you sort of take certain things for granted about yourself and about the world, and then it takes time to realise, actually, oh no, that's just a view that I've got of the world. It's just another sort of filter of ideas and feelings, you know, sort of between me and my actual experience. And as time goes on, you find your experience does get more flowing, and your sense of who you are gets more fluid, and that all happens. But you know, I can keep going a long way. But in a way, I think one of the things I had to work with on the retreat was just getting caught up about time. You know, that things weren't going fast enough, or I wasn't progressing fast enough, or, oh, you know, it's 2 years and 4 months, the retreat have already gone. Am I going to get to where I've got an idea of what I want to get to, you know, by the end of the retreat? So when I come back and I'm talking to people, I can have some good experiences. But all that's just happening in this moment, and I'm creating it in this moment, you know. So coming back to that helped to diffuse a lot of suffering just around... ideas of time and where I ought to be in my spiritual development. Yeah, you do the best you can. You work as deeply as you can, and then it just takes as long as it takes, really. And I think letting go of needing it to take this time, or it shouldn't have taken that long so far, all that sort of thing. I caused myself a lot of suffering. Really,
Were there any particular Buddhas or Bodhisattvas that were present for you during this time?
Oh, there were lots. They're all there. Yes. I felt very very blessed, I suppose, to have that opportunity to practice in the first place. But then, the Buddha and for me, quite a lot of having written and practiced, about a lot of these figures, and we're a lot there. And over 3 years, I focused on particular figures, like I did a lot of green Tara practice, say. But quite often other figures would emerge and sort of come into the mix and add in qualities or just sort of pop up spontaneously. And, so it's very, very rich on that sort of archetypal, deeper level.
We weren't alone.
And I think I learned to trust that more. I think it's great that in Sri Ratna, when we talk about going for refuge, we put a lot of emphasis on, Sangharakshita has always put a lot of emphasis on to the Buddha, it's Bhutan Sangha Chami, to the Buddha for refuge I go. So it's quite a sense of being active, and I think that partly comes out of in the early days of the movement, like when I was around in the early 70s, if you came to visit a centre, there'd be lots of kind of select hippies just kind of lying on the floor and you'd have to kind of step over us, to get to the shrine room. So you put a lot of emphasis on kind of effort and commitment and, you have to do it, it won't just happen, which is absolutely right. But then I think it's also important to put emphasis on the other side. What I've been talking about is what we would call the karma niyama. You make an effort to in your spiritual development, but you also need the other side, the dharma niyama, which is it's also possible to just open into the influence of reality, the influence of the bodhisattvas. All these things are rather hard to talk about in words, but. I think I learned to just trust that much more. And I think it's really good if we can, in all sorts of situations, interact and we just entrust ourselves to the three jewels. It's like sometimes talking to people who are engaged in learning centers like this, I feel like, they're putting tremendous kind of effort into it and very dedicated, and I'm very moved by that. But also at times you can see they've got a lot on their shoulders, and they're feeling the weight of it on their shoulders and feeling a bit kind of I've got a lot to do and a bit anxious and it's hard going, and is the centre going to go well, because they really want it to go well. But then I sort of think back, and when Sangharakshita sort of started Sri Ratna, he talks about having a sense of a kind of overarching presence of the Bodhisattva, that's how he put it, that was somehow almost like kind of working through him, sort of starting from this little sort of basement in Mammoth Street in London back in 1967, to something that's now gone all around the world and includes all of us and thousands of other people. And I suppose I think, that never went away. It wasn't just there for him because he was a special person. It's sort of available to us in any true Ratna centre. In fact, it's available to any human being if they just really manage to kind of open out to it sufficiently. It's like you can sort of entrust yourself to the Dharma on a certain level, as well as still making your own effort. So I have more of a sense of that. I'm going off on one again. Is that?
Yeah.
I've got a question, which is, I was thinking particularly in that area where you were sort of unpicking the layers and sort of seeing the assumptions and ideas that you had about the world or yourself.
Yeah.
Were there any particular Dharma teachings by the three lecturers or which is something that you used in the process?
I found the three lectures really helpful. Really helpful. I think it's sort of
it's quite easy to see, well, in a way it's quite easy to look at experience and see that it doesn't last. You know? Mm. Especially if all you're doing all the time is just sitting there. Oh, where did that go? Oh, okay. That's not there anymore. Oh, right. you know, it's quite easy to do that. And then, well, a bit like Vigishri was saying, our tendency then, our automatic tendency is to react in with sort of, oh, not wanting it to be like that, or, you know, sort of pulling away from that. And, you know, in a way, that for me was the dukkha element, the suffering element. But if I could learn to sort of relax that dukkha response, then there would be the insubstantiality, in a way. There would be, it would all open up. It wouldn't have to be that there was a thing that I was wanting to be fixed that wasn't going to be fixed and was causing me trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, if I could sort of relax that response, then it would all open up somehow and it wouldn't be such a problem. And that, for me, was a sort of experience of insubstantiality, in a sense. So, yes, I worked quite a lot with the three actions in that way, just sort of in very sort of basic experience, if you like.
Yeah, I worked a lot with the actions as well. In a way, a lot just came down to the problem is kind of clinging on to an idea of a fixed self, a fixed ego. And in a way, if I just remembered that was always going to hurt, and just each time I noticed, you know, sort of tension in my body or tension in my mind, I came to think of dukkha as of suffering, and this has been kind of stress and tension. And wherever there was stress and tension, it was because somehow I was in some way clinging onto a me that needed to be, that needed this or needed that or was scared or, every time. So in a way, it got as simple as, am I really open to my experience? No, I'm not. So, okay. So what am I holding on to here? And just keep letting it go. And when I did that, and when I was open to the nature around me, I was open to other people, yeah, there wasn't any problem. Yeah. Practice got much simpler over 3 years.
A question about fear. I'm just aware that can arise when you do, you know, intense practice, particularly in this kind of area. Mm. So I wondered if you had any, how that was, and how it's to do with it.
I had a lot of fear and anxiety, quite, I know. It's amazing, it's like this, if you do 2 days retreat, but certainly things clearer to see over 3 years, was how many different levels things were operating on at once. So, you know, I can talk about my retreat in terms of, connecting with the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas or compassion or some of the nature of things. But then there's also just a lot of sort of psychological archaeology going on. You know, I kind of go down through, you know, a whole layer of intense anxiety and fear of death. And quite a lot of that in year one. And then year two was a lot of sort of rage, and Mr. Grumpy Bear was turning around quite a lot of time, and other things at different times. So you just work through all that. I think a lot of, again, Sangharakshita's, his view is that all that sort of deep fear, whatever you may latch it onto, is actually fear of death. And that's chimed with my experience quite a lot as time went on. It's also been, it's part of the difficulty of sort of venturing into those insight areas when you start looking more deeply at your experience, as I was trying to sort of suggest earlier. You know, you can reach a point where you think, I don't get this, whether I thought I did, at least. And that can bring up a real, hang on to your chair, kind of fear. Which again, I think it's one of the good things about mentoring. You can have mentoring at all sorts of levels of your practice right from the beginning. But as time goes on, I think as you move closer to dismantling that fixed sense of self, it often brings up a lot of fear. And it really, really helps. You know, some people can go through that just with having a really strong imaginative connection with a Buddha or a Bodhisattva or a teacher, Sangharakshita or one of these teachers or somebody which you know about. But for a lot of people, it really helps if you've got a person. So, for me, one of the benefits of having one mudra was that I knew that he'd got much further with that process than I had. And so I was thinking, I don't know if I want this. I could just look at him and think, well, he came through this and out the other side. And he said he was really relaxed and really happy and really open. And life doesn't seem to be a problem for him, so maybe I'll keep going. So that helped. And just lots of metta and positive, all the positive emotion you can find. And just just turning towards your experience with as much kindness as you can.
So often I would find it's like, it's the thinking about what's going to happen or the anticipation of things that causes me the fear. It's not the actual experience that I'm in at the time. You know, that's just experience. But the minute I start to sort of try and add it all up or think what's coming next, then I get into that sort of fear space. The practice is always the same.
I'm curious about kind of the other side of the fear, so the heart opening.
Yes.
So closing down. Yes. Particularly as there are four of you in your interactions with each other, but also since you've been back off retreat, just how that has been experienced in terms of the heart really opening from the practice. And the breakdown of self and other and what's been like.
I'm really glad you answered that question because I think so often we think of sort of the loss of self as what we're losing and not what we're gaining. And, you know, in a way I'm only just sort of scratching the surface of what you're talking about, so I'm not sure I can really fully answer that question, but I do know that for me it's like actually it can be such a relief to let go of that. And yeah, that's what sustains me, that's what pulls me through, whether it be sort of seeing someone who's in that state and just saying, yes, I want that, you know, or you know, having had a glimpse of that and saying, oh, that's just much easier to live with than what I do the rest of the time. And yeah, in terms of other people, it's just a continuation of that, really. It's just, there's no sort of, well, I must admit, I sort of have felt a bit like Miranda in The Tempest at times. Oh, wow, another amazing person. Oh, wow, all these wonderful people out here. Yeah. So it has been a bit like that.
I thought it was great that there was a small group of us. Because I think to start with, you know, I'd had this sort of dream of doing a retreat like that for years. And I think my sense was right now, I'm just going to go, you know, very deeply into my experience and close my door. And actually, that wasn't quite a heart-opening way to do it. Over 3 years, well, just with this German couple who were also on retreat. Mm-hmm. As Vijayana said, you know, from a different sangha, different practices, and yet we just met every week as, you know, four Dharma practitioners, and we just shared our experience and what was going on with our practice. And we just, Yeah, and you watch one another going up and down and having difficulties and having really good times and better times and then, oh no, just opening to one another. I suppose I saw again, I think one of the things I've appreciated about Sri Lankan is that we create a lot of group situations for group practice, whether it's sort of chapter meetings in the order or going for refuge groups and Dhamma study groups and all kinds of meetings. And sometimes they can, you can take them a bit for granted or they can not go particularly well. But they really are a tremendous opportunity just to step beyond yourself and open your heart. And, we had some very moving times, just the four of us, sitting, just sharing our experience as human beings and just bringing awareness to that. And, a lot of kind of kindness and love. It's, I was very moved.
A question related to that is being aware of the other suffering and being able to hold that without being overwhelmed by that as the heart opens. And your descriptions of, again, coming back is that there's been a great steadiness, but I'm wondering what it's like to re-encounter so much suffering when your heart is so open from your practice and being able to hold that.
It's a bit of work. And so, yes.
Again, if I can stay in the moment, it somehow works better than if I create stories about it. But at the same time, I just feel that, I encounter suffering and it's sort of, it's very, very sad, but somehow it can still flow. So what doesn't work is if I sort of try and fix it all and, have it all in this shape or that shape, and then it somehow I get caught up with it and it drags me down, it doesn't help anybody else. But if I can really sort of stay open and stay in contact and let it flow, then I can really feel the suffering, but I'm not trying to sort of put it into a particular shape or make ideas about what's going on.
I'm just trying to feel into what happens. It feels as if the mana kind of meets suffering. And in some ways it feels sadder because I can see that in me and in other people, quite a lot of it isn't necessary. I mean, yes, there's basic physical suffering and things like that, but when we create all these kind of concerns about things that never happen and all that. Yeah, at the moment it just feels like it sort of flows through. It sort of flows through my heart. I'm not taking a sort of stance in relation to it. It's just, okay, it's there. I can feel it. I haven't got to make it better. Maybe just having somebody there who can just be open to it, but who doesn't have to make it better. Helps.
Thank you. How are we doing this time?
Yeah. Are we done?
Just a perhaps more practical question. Did you have time of complete solitary while you went off and a week or so, what did you sort of practice doing?
You had a week when I went back to visit my parents.
Then it must be nice.
I'm not going to come back to you soon, don't you?
Imagine, should the need have arisen, you've done it anyway.
Yeah. I did talk about doing it at one point. In the end, I just got on with my practice. The more important thing for me was that I could be alive and creative with what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. I have a sort of practical question, or a curiosity question. Did you take a set of books out with you? That was it.
Or did you
I took a small selection of my Dharma books. It's probably about 40 books. It's very difficult to know, you know what I might want to delve into or what might be useful. So, yes, I had a bookshelf.
You didn't have a secret supply coming.
We had Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I had a bookshelf and a half by the end of it.
Can I ask, how was it to leave?
Good question. I don't know yet.
I felt sad to be leaving the place. I felt very kind of connected with it, and even connected to the nature very strongly. All the kind of beings, all the beings in that place, it didn't matter whether they're human beings or beetles or what they were, I felt connected to them. It's kind of sad to leave, and I sort of went around sort of saying goodbye to trees and cows and beetles and people and things, you know, before I came away. But I suppose I always knew that, you know, that it's going to be about 3 years, and you know, that would be probably most that I'd be able to carve out and do. And I also do have, you know, a more kind of outgoing communicative side to me. So it felt a bit like a chance to let that out a bit. And also, yeah, just time to go back into normal life, everyday life. Yeah. And, try out the practice under these conditions. Yeah, and see if there's something useful for other people or that might help. It's been all right, legal. And I was really pleased to be back under four walls and a roof after 3.5 winters in the environment in my wooden circus wagon, much as I loved it. The thought of another winter was, you know, I didn't miss. I'm not missing the winter.
Quite a simple question, really. Did you keep a journal?
I kept a very rough kind of list of major events. But no, I didn't. I wrote down my dreams for quite a period of time. And I did other little bits of it. I wrote quite a lot of poems, which were a sort of journal. I don't think they had any great literary merit, but they, you know, they were a bit of a kind of record of things that had gone. But again, because of this thing about trying to get away from having a fixed sort of identity, I didn't even really want to kind of be writing down the story of my 3 years. Partly because I knew then I would be wanting to tell people the story of my 3 years when I got back, and even be thinking about that, you know, before I came back. But yes, it was really about just being as expansive as possible. And, so I didn't. I mean, because I'm a writer, there were times where I would have kind of really kind of liked to have written something. But I was focusing on meditation, so I kept dropping that. At the end of the 3 years, I made a list of all the sort of ideas that I'd not followed through for, you know, books, workshops, retreats. I think about 30 of them. Just went and sat on my cushions. You didn't keep it in,
No. Similar reason. So you did you sort of be less distracting to not write stuff down. Like sometimes, you know, when I do, I can just, you just write them down and that's it.
Yeah.
But you had a few pages of bits that you write occasionally, didn't you?
Now and again, yeah. I'm not saying, with all of this, I'm not saying, you know, I think the way I did it is the best way to do it, necessarily. I'm just reporting how I did it. But yeah, on other retreats I have found it helpful, you know, just to get something out of my head and down there objectively, and then it's a relief.
The loosening of the fixed sense of self, things to seem more fluid.
Yeah.
Did that affect your decision making positively or negatively? I'm just thinking of it.
I think it became more intuitive, more spontaneous. Mm-hmm. I was more prepared to just trust. Sort of trust some kind of deeper intuition rather than kind of working it out. And it seemed to just.
Perhaps
the decisions more sort of made themselves. Sort of,
you just get out of the way more. So.
Can I ask,
having seen the relationship between conditions and practice, how deeply sensitive, wise and aware do you think we might become living in everyday lives and working and being parents? And what's your view on that? The conditions that many of us do practice in, has that changed?
I've been in those conditions. I think maybe that I could perhaps answer that a bit better in a year's time, but I would very much hope the answer to that would be, of course, we can practice in different conditions. It's just I'm not quite sure I taught for many, many years, you know, from that position and two people who are in that position, and I don't know whether this experience will have changed the way I teach, you know, from living in the world, if you like, to people who are also living in the world. I don't know quite how that experience would have changed that, but I sort of, maybe being hopelessly idealistic, but the mind is the mind, you know, and looking at experience, it's exactly the same experience wherever we are. So it's just a question of finding the ways that are helpful for us to get into that. Yeah. I'm going to have to learn how to be in the world again, I think, first.
Yes, I'm coming back to try and empty all Buddhist centres. People are just disappearing for the hills.
I'm not doing a very good job.
I really do believe that you can practice the Dharma under all kinds of conditions, and I've seen some very impressive practitioners who've never had the chance to come and do much retreat at all. So I think the decisive things just really are your dedication to the Dharma and just that steady moment by moment, day by day practice. That's really what is transforming. I think overall, yes, I hope that we can, different people need different conditions and they need different conditions at different times too. So I hope that in our Sangha we can kind of create opportunities for those who benefit to do longer retreats. But I'm not saying that's the way to go at all. I think it really does come down to you dedicate yourself to the Dharma. You practice in a heartfelt way. And you really engage with the conditions that you're in. You make those as good as you possibly can. It'll all come out of that. That really is all. The grass is always greener. But really, where you are now, you can always practice.
Do you feel an inclination to go back?
Not right now, no. Maybe I'm still carrying quite a lot of it with me at the moment. Maybe we'll see, you know, we'll see as time goes on. I can imagine, you know, doing a bit. I suppose my inclination is to just keep touching as much depth as possible. And also to be, if I can be a benefit to people, to do that. So I suppose very often, you know, in the past, I've sort of thought, what I want is these particular conditions, or I want to do this particular thing. Whereas more these days, I just kind of make wishes, and they're very general, you know, sort of, you know, may I have the best conditions that I can to practice the Dharma in. May I be as beneficial to beings as I can be. And I kind of let that sort of positive volition just kind of create conditions, and yes, I can't choose. But I don't need to know more than I just want to keep going deep and being helpful. Mm-hmm.